Medical information obtained from our website or the live show is not intended to be a substitute for professional care. If your pet has or you suspect they might have an illness or other medical condition, you should consult a health care provider. The opinions expressed on this radio program are not necessarily those of All Paws Pet Talk, this radio show, or their sponsors.
Listening to Smart Animal Talk on All Paws Pet Talk Radio. And, well, we've got something special, someone I've never interviewed before. Jules Korf is coming to us to talk about Mozzie Pants. And Mozzie Pants, well, you probably guessed Mozzie's a dog. I love that name. That's such a good call name. Some of you have bad call names for your dogs. Names that rhyme with the word no, like Bruno. No. Change that dog's name to Brew and he'll be coming to you. You won't believe the difference. The name Mozzie is really good because it's really distinctive. It's different than all the other dogs in the park. And you can really exaggerate the Z's. Mozzie. Oh, yeah, that dog will be flying to you. So let's find out about Mozzie Pants. Welcome to the show, Jules.
Thank you so much for having me.
It's good to have you. Okay, so what's the story on Mozzie? I understand Mozzie's a rescue. Does Mozzie have a nice story behind him?
Yes, it turned out to be a great story. Mozzie was living on the streets in Southern California, apparently his entire life, and he finally got captured, but he was immediately put on death row. And so that part is sad, but then I got my hands on him, and he came to us, but he was no exposure to living indoors or trusting humans, just a lot of challenges from a dog who'd been living on the streets. And one of his challenges, obviously, was not being house trained, but he was a marker and walking on the tables and everything else. But the marking was something that was important to me to get him to be comfortable with without having any stress in his life because he had so many other stresses.
So marker for people listening, what she means is this dog was lifting his leg and peeing on things he's not supposed to inside. That's what she's talking about. Okay.
Thank you.
So what did you do?
So I made, which I had made previously for other dogs who had incontinence issues as they got older, but I made the Mozzie pants, original pants is what we call them. And they're cotton pants and they have a cotton absorbent padded lining that goes on the front of the pants. There's no seams on the inside, so it doesn't irritate the dog. And so when Mozzie would lift his leg, he would mark. I would very nicely take him to the door, take the pants off, let him smell them, take him outside, tell him no, get him to mark again, give him a treat, bring him to the door, and put a clean pair of pants on. And within 5 days, he was completely housebroken. And
wow.
No more marking. Yeah, it was great. And no more marking in our house. But then it was the holidays, and we were going to the in-laws' home. So I brought the Mozzie original pants with me again and went through that at 3 more houses. And he only marked once, but the pants captured all the urine, so it was not an issue.
Okay.
And he figured out that there was more than one indoors. So now he doesn't have to wear the pants.
Right. You taught him not to pee in your house, and then you had to teach him to pee not in other people's houses. And once he got it, indoors is the commonality here. I'm not supposed to be inside. Okay, got it. I get it that it would take that to explain it to him. And as long as he's peeing all over the furniture, nobody's going to have the patience with this. They're going to just scold him, yell at him, maybe not redirect him, maybe just dump him and rehome him again. So it's so nice you did that. Okay, so diapers for dogs, but you don't want your dog standing around in a diaper, do you? Do these things look like diapers?
No, they're more like potty training pants for like a 2-year-old. You know how they're very cotton, comfortable, breathable fabric. And you know how the training pants for kids just have several layers of cotton padding? So that's what's capturing the urine. If you have, they can also be used for incontinence issues, females in heat, submissive peeing. If you have a larger dog who has a heavy flow of fluid, you could put a feminine hygiene pad inside. of the pants.
Oh, because I was going to ask you about breeding females, because, yeah, they are messy. And my current solution is not a good solution. I go and I buy the cheapest pair, you know, 5 or 10 pack of boys' short style underwear, because they have the fly for the tail. Mm-hmm. And I make the poor girl wear boys' underwear, and it's not very absorbent, and you can't put anything in because it shifts. So I have to change it all the time, all the time, all the time. Or make her go, you know, banished for no reason, right? She's not done anything wrong. I don't want to banish her, but I don't want the mess. So so that makes so much sense for breeders. Also, the dogs, there are dogs at the end of their life that have unsolvable incontinence issues. Now, if you have a dog that's healthy and young and it's not been diagnosed, this should not be happening. So you should get to the vet if you've got a dog who wakes up in a puddle of urine, or that goes, it sleeps right through peeing, or pees just constantly on everything, or pees every time someone comes to the door. These problems can be behavioral. They can be training. They can, the greeting especially, the peeing when people come to the door. But the one where they wake up and they've had an accident, that's almost always medical. In fact, I think it's always medical. I don't think I've ever seen a behavioral one. So if you've got that going on, you need to diagnose it with a vet. And it's quite possible that you'll have a solution that's so simple, like maybe antibiotics once, or maybe a change in vitamins, or there might be something going on there that you could easily remedy without a lot of cost and not have to give up the dog or the cat. But in the meantime, while you're figuring it out, Mozzie Pants. So how do they get Mozzie Pants?
So we have a website. It's mozziepants.com, and that's M-O-Z-Z-I-E, pants.com.
Okay. And, okay, so there's the cotton ones, and right. I like that idea. That works for absorbing. What about, I can see you've got fleece. What's the fleece for? Is that something people can get too?
Yeah, if I could back up just a little bit on the cotton ones, there's also T-shirts, cotton T-shirts. And they can cover wounds or hot spots. They can also help keep the pup clean because it covers the entire underside. So when you go for a walk and they get grime on their front legs and their tummy, because Mozzie had a real hard time with toweling off at the door. That was very traumatic for him. But he was happy to wear the T-shirts and then just take them off at the door and go run into the house. And you can combine the pants and the T-shirts to make a onesie. The shirts can also help noise-phobic pups. And then I also made a walking pant. So it's a cotton walking pant, but it's a crotchless dog pant. So similar to the original pant.
That makes sense.
Made for indoors or outdoor use and fun. And those I designed because my other rescue was getting some hot spots from seasonal allergies on his hind end. And I found if I just put the breathable cotton garments on, that he would leave the wound alone and wouldn't irritate it, so it decreased my trips to the vet.
Oh, nice. Well, we only have a few seconds left. Can you tell them where to go to see these adorable dogs dressed up in their pants and their diapers and their Mozzie Pants? Where do they go online?
MozziePants.com, MozziePants.com. And if you go to Club Mozzie Pants, we have over 150 dogs and one cat in Mozzie Pants for your viewing.
Oh, nice. Okay, well, thanks, Mozzie. Thanks for helping out all those rescue dogs and the one cat with their issues. I'm glad that you got such inspiration. And thank you for coming to Smart Animal Talk, All Paws Pet Talk Radio. All right, everybody, stay tuned. We'll have more Smart Animal Talk with me, Deb Wolf, coming up next.
I'm your doggy.
I'm your doggy.
And I love you.
Hello, you're listening to Smart Animal Talk, All Buzz Pet Talk Radio, which means you're listening to me, Deb Wolf. You can check me out at debwolf.ca, and all my poodle puppies, 7 are now sold. There's only one left to be sold, but all 8 are still here mugging for the camera, doing their cute little prancy moves with their curly, curly little hairdos. The last guest we had on before that just left, Mozzie Pants, I want you to know that she makes it for all sizes. So if you've got a dog with an elimination problem, a pee-pee problem, issues that you're working on, and you want these pants, it doesn't have to be a teacup. It doesn't have to be a giant dog. It can be any size dog. They've got it at mozziepants.com. Okay, so everybody, we're going to take a little turn toward rescue. And as you all heard from the first segment, Mozzie was on death row. Mozzie was a rescue dog once upon a time in Southern California. And we like to favor those rescues and those rescue dogs here at Smart Animal Talk, All Paws Pet Talk Radio. Me too. I've done my share of rescues over the years. And there are some issues you have to deal with that are a little tricky. And sometimes a dog won't know how to do stairs. Sometimes a dog isn't house trained. Sometimes they're shy or they haven't been touched enough. There's a lot you have to work on. And the people in your neighborhood are picking up the slack for governments that aren't paying for things, and there are some shelters that are doing some amazing work all over the country. So Chris Rubens decided to give them a helping hand with Adopt a Shelter, and he picks them. He picks somebody really, really deserving and brings them on the show. So Chris, I'd like you and your guest Pam to join me on the radio. Welcome to the show, Chris. And Pam, welcome to the show, Chris.
Thank you so very much for having us again, Deb. Pat, thank you for joining us. So this month we're going to take a little bit of a turn here away from our four-legged friends. We're going to talk about our fine-feathered friends. January is National Adopt-a-Rescue Bird Month. And I did my research throughout our database of aviary sanctuaries and rescue groups. We came across Pam Lee and her wonderful group called Mikaboo Companion Bird Rescue. Pam, welcome. Tell us a little bit about yourself. Tell us a little bit about the organization.
Certainly. My name is, as was mentioned earlier, Pamela Lee, and I am the Development Director and Chief Financial Officer for Mikaboo, located here in Northern California. We are an all-volunteer organization and have been in business for about 17 years and very proud of having grown over those many, many years from about 3 volunteers way back when to about 200 volunteers on an active basis, currently caring for over 450 rescued companion birds.
So where do you get these birds from? Where do they come from?
We like to say that birds come from the same places that rescued dogs and cats come from, with an added twist. So we get them from shelters. We get them from individuals who can no longer care for them for financial or medical reasons. We get them from people who find them in their parks or their backyards, and they know they are not the right guardian for these feathered creatures, and so we get them from individuals directly. Or sometimes we get them from literally off the street. Somebody will say, there's a bird fluttering around the Safeway, one of our local grocery stores, in this particular city and intersection. Can somebody please get that bird before they get hit by a car? And so sometimes we do those literal rescues out of a tree, off somebody's roof, or off the street.
I was reading the blog that Dusty Rainbolt had done, that you had shared with her some of your thoughts about the fact of how old these birds can get and what effect that has, not only on the pet parents who originally either adopted them or bought them or had them as part of their family, but then downstream after the kids leave school. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yes, thank you. One of the differentiators for birds as pets rather than cats or dogs is their longevity. Parakeets, those little things that are about the size of your hand and weigh about an ounce, those creatures can live to be 20 years old. The bigger birds, the cockatoos, macaws, and amazons, they have the potential to be 80 years old. And that's a really long time, and most people don't have that in mind when they are looking at this beautiful collection of feathers that's fluttering around their local pet store. So what we do is that we have bird care classes that, among other things, inform people about the longevity of these animals. We do try to plan ahead for that. And we as a rescue group also have another advantage over buying a pet from a store in that we say, if your life has changed, I mean, 20 years, 60 years is a very long time. People get married, they get separated, they have their own families, they move because they get a new employer, or they move because their apartment has been sold out from underneath them. If there comes a circumstance where you can no longer care properly for your pet bird, and if you have gotten that bird from NICABOO, we will take that bird back because our responsibility to that bird once it comes into our system is for the lifespan of that particular animal. So we will take that bird back. We will rehabilitate the bird if necessary, if they have any medical issues, and then find them a new home, again, hopefully for the rest of their natural life.
You know, it occurs to me, first of all, I want to ask you how you catch a bird out in the wild that's a pet that's gone missing and you find it. But also it occurs to me it'd be a better place to go to get a bird at your place than to buy one from a store, because you know all its history, its behavioral, you're going to get help, you have a way out if things don't work out. I mean, it can be a real gamble getting a bird that is probably just out of infancy and you don't know what's about to happen next, right?
Right, exactly. I was telling somebody the other day that, you know, when a human child is born, you don't know whether they're going to be Albert Einstein or whether they're going to be Vincent Van Gogh or, you know, some other more run-of-the-mill kind of a person who's obviously worthwhile in their own right, but isn't one of those outstanding intellectual folks. So much like that, when a bird is born, you don't know whether they're going to be good with cats, dogs, kids. You don't know whether they're going to have that wonderful ability to imitate the English language or the sounds around them. You don't know whether they're going to be a bird that is more attuned to other birds or to humans. Mm. And so, yes, one of the big advantages of getting a bird from a rescue organization is that we know the personality of the bird because we've cared for it. The other, of course, with regards to longevity, is that if you are a more mature person, we have birds in our rescue flock that we know are already about, you know, 10 years old or are about 40 years old. And so we can do potentially a better matchup between the time span you're thinking of versus the potential lifespan of the animal itself. And I can answer the first question that you had.
Yes. How do you catch a bird? You get the call. You go to the neighborhood. You hear some bird maybe in the top of a tree saying hello, which is not what you should hear outside. So now what do you do?
Yes. And some of our rescues have taken literally months. And some of them are surprisingly fast. There was one of our volunteers who got a call that there was a bird perched up on her roof, and would we have somebody come by and get it, because it clearly was not a native bird. So, interestingly, one of our volunteers, in fact, worked within about a half mile of the place. She drove over. She was in her business suit, which means it all, and it had a skirt on it. She bravely, because she was afraid of heights, climbed up this very rickety ladder to the top of the roof, reached across, because the bird wasn't coming to her, but reached across with a sliced apple, I believe. And fortunately, over the course of about 10 or 15 minutes, which is a very short amount of time in these matters, the bird came to her close enough where she could throw a towel over it, towel the bird, put it into a carrier that she happened to have, and that one was done. On our more elongated rescue, we have had to get the bird to trust us, that we weren't going to do something terribly awful to it. And so there was one instance that we've documented that took literally 3 or 4 months, because we would put food out and try to get the bird to come after the bird trusted that the food was there and the bird could eat without anything untoward happening. Then we put a cage out there with the door open and the food close to the cage and got the bird used to that, then put the food in the cage and got the bird used to that. And then finally, got
close
to the point
cage.
Where we had
da, da, da,
cage.
Success.
Yes, that took a while, as you might imagine.
So when you get these birds, where do they go? Do you have a sanctuary? Do you have a facility? Do they go to foster homes?
In our particular case, we are foster home-based, so a large part of those 200 active volunteers are people that have one or more birds in their homes, and they are responsible for providing the day-to-day food, water, toys, tender loving care, socialization, while the rescue organization provides the cage and the medical expenses that might be necessary. So I myself have approximately 10 birds that I share my home with.
I like your use of the term approximately.
Yes, I have to stop and count. I'm not sure I've got the time for that.
I totally understand, because right now I believe I have 5 cats, but my neighbor's cats are here so often, so I have approximately 5 cats, I have to say. Sometimes animals choose where they want to be. You know, did you ever have anybody who was particularly gifted at catching these flyaway birds?
Yes, we have one particular person who's been on several rescues, and his magic trick is a potato chip.
Peanut? Oh, potato chip. It's a bribe
because
thing.
Many pet birds come to associate the crinkling of a bag with food. And so he brings one of those things along, and he has used it effectively a couple of times to draw the bird nearer. And yes, to your point, having real food as opposed to an empty bag is also very desirable.
What are some of the special needs that you have with these birds?
Do you know what? We're running out of time. We're really close to the break, so I think we're going to have to come back and talk a little more after the break. And hopefully we can make sure to tell people how to reach her and where to go, where to get a bird, how to help, all that stuff. So stay tuned, everybody. We'll have one more bird segment, and then we'll be back on the Cats and Dogs with Smart Animal Talk, All Paws Pet Talk Radio. Hello, you're listening to Smart Animal Talk on All Paws Pet Talk Radio. And I know how hard it is to catch a dog who's got away from the owner, or the people were moving and it gets away and it doesn't know anybody, and all the people try to help or try to catch it. And that's a dog who normally comes to strangers and is used to being outside. Man, can you imagine trying to catch a bird that can just fly away? Away, away, bye-bye. Oh, no, that's got to be stressful. So I want to hear more about these bird rescues, and Chris has kindly brought us a guest to talk about it. So I'm so glad I'm sharing this with you today. Thank you for coming, Chris, and sharing this with us. Have you got some more questions?
Well, the thing that I was going to pick up before the break was, Pam, tell us about these animals and some of the special needs they might have.
Certainly, and the special needs for birds can often parallel special needs for ourselves. So, for example, one of the birds that I am fostering has a heart murmur. When we picked him up, we did not know that, but when we went off to the vet for his exam, we found out that he has an enlarged heart, and so he is getting daily medication for his blood pressure to drop it down to allow him to be as active as he wants. And which is really easy because he is now trained to come to the front of the cage and take his medicine from the syringe. I don't have to tell him, force him to do anything. He just knows that he's going to get his medicine, and right after that, he's going to get a treat. It's like a trick he's been taught.
So taking his medicine is a trick, just like you teach a dog. That's amazing. Nice.
Exactly, yes. And then others of our special needs birds, perhaps we've had to amputate a wing because of cancer, or perhaps they've had a leg that's had to be amputated, and we set up a special cage for them to help them with their mobility needs. And, you know, birds and other animals, they tend to not sit around and feel sorry for themselves. They want to be themselves, and so after we make special accommodations for themselves, they're just fine.
That's wonderful. The fact that you make all these special accommodations, that's just awesome. And the fact that you have, like, a return policy, I can't second that any more than what Deb said earlier. What a great way to go about adopting a bird, knowing that you can get it age-appropriate, you can get it, you know, to fit, let's not say your lifestyle, but your life. I think that's a wonderful thing. So how many birds are you dealing with?
So our organization currently is fostering about 450 birds, everything from the small little finches on one end of the size scale to cockatoos, macaws, and Amazons on the other, and everything in between.
Pam, can I ask you, I mean, a lot of people give up dogs because they're maybe going to the bathroom in the wrong place or aggressive or noisy. And with birds, I've met some people, I've been to homes where they say, don't touch the bird. The bird only likes my husband or the bird only likes this person. Is that kind of a problem you see a lot where the bird gets given up because the bird only likes one person and will actually attack, peck, draw blood from other people? Because I seem to see this a lot.
Well, when we say a lot, everything is relative, of course. And there are some people I know who are very much introverted and they want to stage themselves and they get a little bit more aggressive, shall we say, if we put them into an uncomfortable position. And some birds, they really like a person and they get jealous if that person starts paying attention to somebody else. Have we ever seen that in human relationships?
Yes, I have. And that's exactly what it seems like. They'll say to me, oh, well, since you're here to visit the dog, the bird won't like you. So don't interact with the bird. She'll attack you. She's very jealous of the dog. And I think, well, isn't there a way to work that out? Is there?
Yeah, there. So much like with dogs and cats, and perhaps more so with dogs, there is the concept of behavioral consultation. And it doesn't necessarily work in all cases, in part because the person we're also trying to train is the human, because they need to do something on a very consistent basis to train the bird that if I do this, you do that, and if I don't do this, I...
Yes, you're teaching the human to reward what they like, and that's hard sometimes. Some people just don't do it. They don't say good dog, good bird. They don't give the treat at the right moment, right after that bird did the good thing, not before, not independent of other time.
Yes, and if a bird screams and then you rush over to the bird cage, well, you've just given that bird attention.
Oh, like a screaming puppy or a cat that wakes you at 3 a.m. Now, my listeners can relate to that. You don't want to do that. But a screaming bird's pretty hard to ignore, isn't it?
Might be tough, but you got to do
might
it.
Might be tough.
So there is
that's,
the concept.
That's why God made earplugs, huh?
And the nice thing about our rescue, of course, is that even if you... don't have one of our birds that's gone through our system, we will offer that behavioral consultation to the general public because we want you to continue that commitment that you made initially to the bird. So there's oftentimes something that can be done, but you, the human, need to be committed to it as well.
So, Pam, tell us your most rewarding story in all of this. What stood out? Which bird stood out the most?
There's a bird that comes to mind. He was a green-wing macaw, so one of the bigger ones. When we got the call about him, he was living in a home where the elder person in the household was having medical problems of her own. She was on the elderly side. None of the rest of the family really wanted to have anything to do with the bird. Bird was living in somewhat pitiful conditions. His nails were 4 inches long, and they had grown so long they were corkscrewed.
Ingrown probably, too, and painful.
Very painful. The bird was very much feather-plucked, so it was slightly naked. And
it plucked itself, right? You don't mean this lady did it. It plucked itself, right?
Right, as opposed to people plucking it, yes.
Yeah, okay.
So we took the bird for a number of medical diagnostics and found that the bird had several bones that had been either fused or, so in other words, they healed incorrectly, and a number of injuries such that the vet themselves was surprised that the bird had as much mobility as the bird did. And in fact, one of the more outstanding things when we looked at the x-rays was that the tailbone had been curved inward so that it was impeding the flow of the outbound emissions from the bird, such that the bird was holding it because it was painful for the bird to eject their poop. So fast forward, the bird had surgery to remove the tailbones that were impeding the exit. The bird is now happier. The bird is now interacting with toys. The bird had not done that before. Of course, it is now properly groomed and that. The bird is in a household where he's interacting with the other birds and the humans in the family in a much more quality of life manner. Before, the bird was very afraid of hands and what the hands might do for it. And the bird is only about now 32 years old, so he is still available, looking for a permanent home that will appreciate him for who he is for the rest of his life. And one milestone that I heard recently from his foster parent was he heard Boomer, the bird, singing, and that was something that he had never heard from the bird. In the first year or so, yes. So
did the feathers come back, or is it still bald?
With feather follicles, they are a little bit like hair follicles in that they can be damaged at, to the point where they cannot regenerate. So Boomer will never have his tail feathers back, but he is regrowing them along his wings and back.
Pam, how do people get a hold of you? How do people get in touch with your organization?
The absolute best way is to go to our website, www.nickaboo.org. And the nice thing about having such an unusual name is that we are the only thing that comes up if you happen to Google us.
That's wonderful. I can't thank you enough for coming on and sharing the story with us. These are exactly the folks that we want to highlight because of the work they're doing. These special needs animals, these birds in particular, they need new homes, and we need to find them new homes because that's just the right thing to do. And at the end of the day, if you want to help Mikaboo adopt an animal, if you can't adopt one of their birds, you can still shop for them through adoptashelter.com. And that's all I can say at this point. Pam, thank you so much for being on the show. Really appreciate your input.
Well, and thank you for coming, Chris, and adoptashelter.com. Thank you for bringing us yet another worthy cause. And those bald birds, oh my gosh, my heart goes out to them. We got to get them happy and regrowing their feathers when they can. Thank you for joining us today, both of you. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, so everybody, we're going to go cats and dogs coming up soon on Smart Animal Talk, All Paws Pet Talk Radio. Stay tuned.
I'm your doggy.
I'm your doggy.
And I love you.
And I love you.
And you know that
you know
I really do.
I really do.
Hello, you're listening to Smart Animal Talk, All Paws Pet Talk Radio. And it's raining here in the rainforest, in case anybody's wondering. I was out walking dogs this morning in the pouring rain, just pouring and pouring and pouring. And I was thinking, as we did our first segment, they were talking about this dog that was homeless in Southern California that got rescued. And I thought, well, would it be so bad to be in Southern California today? It would be if I was a homeless dog, that's for sure. I don't want to come back as a homeless dog. But I sure would like to see the sun. So in this part of the world where I live, Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada, right next door in Seattle, there's a really, really serious flu outbreak, big time. It's very, very widespread. It's been circulating for a while. And the most common symptoms that you need to know about: high fever, cough, runny nose, watery eyes, sore throat, loss of appetite. And the dogs who catch it usually don't feel good for about 2 weeks. So if your dog comes down with it, let him rest. Give him access to water in the outdoors and just let him rest. It spreads the same way human flu does. And this one we can carry, which is a little troubling. So you won't get sick, but you can bend down and pet someone's dog and then take it home to your own dog. So you might want to cut down on how much you're petting other people's dogs the next little while and wash your hands a lot. There's no vaccination for this strain, I'm sorry to tell you. Otherwise, people would be on it. Sometimes when the flu gets really bad and there might be a need for antibiotics, but it's only if symptoms get really, really bad or there's pneumonia or the dog gets worse. If it's just a kind of feeling draggy and the symptoms I named, then it probably has the flu. If you're worried, go see your vet because it could be something else. But that's going on all through Washington State. And I just thought I'd let you know. So now we're going to talk to a lady who knows all about the pet world. She knows about cats and horses and dogs and how to treat them well in a holistic way, in a natural kind of way. And that's because she's the editor and organizer for Redstone Media Group for quite a few magazines. So I'll let you tell herself about the list of magazines because it's quite extensive. But we're going to be talking about paws. What can you find out about your dog's paw? What does it tell you about your dog? Welcome to the show, Becky Starr. Welcome, Becky.
Hi, Deb. Nice to be back with you. You're always so happy and pleasant and cheerful and make my day start out right.
Oh, good. Well, I'm finally warm and dry. After this, I got to go back out in the rain. But,
I'm in sunny California, so it's a beautiful sunny day here on the beach. The sun is glistening on the water, and it's high 60s, so we're all happy.
Yeah, rub it in. Why don't you?
I had to.
You know, though, the dogs at Camp Good Dog, they don't care. They run in the rain. They swim in the rain. They play in the rain. Rain doesn't bother dogs, not most dogs. So, okay, so what can I tell by their paws? I'm curious about this. Maybe I sometimes test to see if they're right pawed or left pawed. That sort of tells me a little bit about what kind of thinker a dog might be. But what else can I tell by their paw?
Well, the reason I thought about that, you know, of course, your show is, you know, paws talk. And paws actually do talk, and I don't mean in the psychic way, because that's another whole subject, but paws actually talk. They tell a lot if us pest guardians are just listening. So though we don't have a lot of time today, I want to give four simple tips that some of you might be aware of or some of you need to get back in the habit of doing. And this also will kind of tie in with what you were talking about, you know, the dog flu and, you know, catching other things from other animals, you know, that are on the ground. So while I'm not an expertise, you gave me a lot of credit there in knowing all about all animals, yes, our publications work with dogs, cats, horses, veterinarians, etc. But my biggest expertise and kind of experience is with canine. But when it comes to paws, this is going to kind of apply to about any pet. I think that we as humans sometimes, you know, take for granted that dogs and cats and animals, somehow they think Mother Nature is just going to take care of everything. And what's important to remember is that, you know, the animals we're all talking about on your show every day and the listeners who really, you know, are pet lovers, we have to realize that we have domesticated our animals. They're primarily indoors now, and they're probably pretty pampered. And so kind of the wildlife theory doesn't really apply anymore in my view. So the first thing we're going to do, the first tip, is outdoor exposure. How many times, and I know you're going to relate to this, how many times do you see people out walking their dog, 100-degree weather, meaning that concrete is over 100 degrees, or the opposite, it's covered in ice and snow, and it's completely freezing, or they're walking on top of rocks and stones and glass and rough terrain. And if we just as a human think, you know what, I always, when I see people like that, I say to them, you know what, take your shoes and socks off right now, get down on all fours, and try it out yourself. Walk a mile in their pads, and how does that feel? So the simple rule of thumb is, if it doesn't feel good to you, it doesn't feel good to your pet. Don't take the risk of doing permanent damage to those tender little feet that can keep that dog running by your side for years to come. There are a lot of simple solutions out there now that weren't available, you know, 20 years ago. You know, paw protectors, you know, certain salves you can put on. And, yes, the dogs do act funny when you put paws on them, but what's funnier, you know? keeping a dog.
It's funny you're talking about this right now, because I just recently, for the first time ever, bought a pair of those rubber boots and put them on one of my customers. It was a white giant poodle named Van, who comes with severe grass allergies. And for some reason, this particular time he came, he wasn't exhibiting grass allergies anywhere else on his body, but his feet were like crimson and they were starting to get sores and cuts. And I felt a little silly. I mean, you know, he's a big giant white poodle, and I put these purple, because they only had purple in his size, his purple boots on, Van, you know, but it was amazing. We had been like trying to keep him off grass and leash walking him only and washing and cleaning and all this extra stuff. And as soon as he got the purple boots on, he was like the dancing dog. He was flying across the grass fields, chasing all the other dogs, big mood improvement, you know, no need to rest and get all frustrated, right? Because he wants to run. It was perfect. It was like $10 for a pack of, I think there were four in there or something, four sets, 16 boots. I mean, it's really, you're right. There's so many affordable solutions for whatever's going on.
And you can go from, you know, your purple rubber to designer bling. I mean, you know, and the fun part is, I don't know if he reacted, but most of the time, and maybe you've seen videos, you put these little paws or boots or shoes. They even have them looking like tennis shoes. They are so cute. And I'm not about dressing dogs except, you know, for preventative measures. But, oh, my God, you put them on and they start lifting their feet up way high in the ground and they walk funny and they're sticking their legs out. They, you know, they're foreign to them. But once they get used to them, you know, it's the only way to go. When I take my dogs to New York in the snow, those boots go on. When it's hot outside, don't walk your dog anyway. But if you have to, protect their feet. We've forgotten that they are babies now. You know, they're not wild wolves running in the forest. They are domesticated and pampered. So that's my first tip. If
you know, I just want to add one more thing to that. I know we're getting long, but I still want to add one more thing. When I go to a parade or a children's fair or a firework demonstration, anything like that, that's when I think the boots really come in handy. Absolutely. First of all, I don't think dogs want to go to fireworks, and they don't want massive crowds. But if you're walking your dog around Halloween time when people are doing stupid things like breaking glass, leaving garbage, if you're walking your dog through an area that you wouldn't go barefoot in because it's disgusting, okay, you might think, yeah, he's an ancestor of the wolf, like Becky's saying. He's not a wolf anymore. But even a wolf wouldn't walk there. No wolf's going through a park full of garbage and sharp things. So you got, you know, you're dragging your dog along beside you, forcing him to pick an unsafe path, too, in all this.
Absolutely.
Okay, so let's keep going, because I know that was just number one.
The second one tip goes right into what you just said, cleanliness. Again, let's imagine this. Let's humans take your shoes and socks off and walk all day on all fours, just like your pet has to do every day. Oh, my God, can you imagine what your hands and feet would look like, let alone the amount of bacteria, germs, toxins, pesticides, the unmentionables that the ground life has to offer and don't want. I would say if you walked around even barefoot all day yourself, everywhere you go, what you would see would be unacceptable to most humans. And then now think about those same cute little paws that walk across your floors in the house. They jump up on your furniture. They crawl up in your lap. They curl up with you in bed at night. Or maybe you see them licking their paws. You know, not a good visual when you know what they are touching on that ground every single day. And I didn't even mention unmentionables. Simple solution. Wash their feet every day. I used to keep a little, like, cat litter pan at my front door or the back door. Fill it with hose water. And before those dogs would come into the house, they would actually have to step into the little box of water, and voila. I knew that a lot of those creepy unknowns were rinsed off before they entered the house and no longer something my dog might ingest, or that could perhaps, you know, be carrying some kind of virus that, you know.
Oh, Becky, I'm totally agreeing with you. I do not want that in my bed. We have to go to break, so we're going to keep Becky Starr one more segment. We're going to come back and talk more about this. Stay tuned to Smart Animal Talk, All Blast Pet Talk Radio.
I'm your doggy.
I'm your doggy.
And I love you.
And
you know that I really do.
Thank you.
Hello! You're listening to Smart Animal Talk, All Paws Pet Talk Radio, with me, Deb Wolf. And you can see more of me at dubwolf.ca or dubwolf.net. And there, you'll get a link to the Facebook Camp Good Dog with the 8 beautiful standard poodle puppies. Standard poodles are not wolves. They need hairdos. They don't shed. That's a real obvious example of a dog that is no longer primitive and able to care for itself. I mean, look at all we've done to it to make it so that it doesn't lose its hair all over our house and make us all stuffed up when we have allergies or asthma. Well, some of those dogs, the Wheatons, some of the hypoallergenic dogs are even maybe a little more needing of your care. Little more sensitive to certain things because they aren't getting rid of the hair that gets dirty. They're stuck with it. So you got to pay attention to some of this stuff. And I think looking to the wolf, the fox, the coyote is good to know where the animal came from, but it's really not accurate for the little tiny chihuahua in your living room. So Becky's helping us understand that in terms of paws. We've gone through a couple of things about touching the ground and how clean it is. And have you got more for us, Becky?
Yeah, well, we kind of left off of, you know, washing those feet once a day. You know, as you were saying, you don't want that creepy stuff coming into your bed, on your furniture, on you. And so I was mentioning, you know, a habit I have, if you're lucky enough, you have a home and you have a front door and a back door, put a little kitty litter pan of water, hose it down, have them step in it before they come in the house. If you don't have that luxury, I walk mine straight into the shower. I rinse those paws off. It only takes less than a minute. And what you would be eliminating could ensure the health of your whole pet, your family, your house, let alone what horrible, toxic, disgusting, breeding, live things that come in on those paws. So that's tip
number
two.
You know, when you say
clean
toxic,
those paws.
When you say toxic, it makes me think of the fact that all those sprays, you know, you go to a place like Palm Springs and it's so green, but it's desert. The grass is sprayed, really, really sprayed. It's not just watered. The dog that walks through that is coating its body with all that medicine that's designed to kill insects. You know,
okay.
That's just icky.
And you don't know if your neighbor is spraying pesticides. You know, you may be, you know, the most cautious person of all natural, healthy, green, organic in your home. But the guy next door could be spraying, you know, Roundup, you know, on every part of their, you know, property and or in the parks. You're just exposed to so many things. It takes a minute just to wash those paws off every day and feel safe and clean and not getting in bed with you at night.
Well, and the thing is, if you don't wash them, and for me up here in Canada, it's not so much a problem in Vancouver, but over in Toronto and places like that, they salt the pavement.
That's right.
And they put all this chemical stuff to get rid of the snow, not just salt. Some of it's worse than salt. So, okay, now your dog has a choice. You come in for a walk. He's had a great time. He's sleeping, but his paws are itching. They're burning. He's got them covered in salt and chemicals. So he has a choice. He can either let them burn and bug him, and maybe get all kinds of cracks and problems, and skin problems, foot problems, maybe even lose a pad. I mean, he can get some problems. Or he can lick it off and ingest it all.
That's
awful. That's just awful.
And that kind of goes back to what we were talking about earlier, of if you're not going to take the precaution of putting little doggy boots on them, it takes a minute, you know, to protect them from that snow and ice and the salt they put on the ground. You know, it kind of fits right back into, you know, protect the paws before they go out into the elements when the elements are unusual, or at least clean them off.
Yeah, and you know what? For some dogs, this is so easy. I mean, I've had customers where I get them started on a routine where, you know, those little sprinkler toys you have for kids? You could, if your dog's a water dog that loves the water, and on the hot days of summer, your dog will actually rinse itself. It'll actually put its paw on the sprinkler and rinse itself. I mean, once you get it going as a trick with a treat, this doesn't have to be difficult or messy.
No, it's simple, easy, no-brainer, and it can save you a lot of problems.
Okay,
so tip number three.
Mm-hmm.
You know how we love our manis and petties. Well, our dogs don't have the option of going to have a mani-pedi every week. And again, back to thinking Mother Nature just takes care of these things. But they don't. I know you'll probably relate to this. I have two dogs. They walk the same walk every day, same pattern, same everything. One of their nails grows like she's down in calcium all day and grow an inch a month. The other one, there's
funny.
Never any new growth at all. So who knows why? Mother Nature isn't doing the job. So nail
do you bites, ever, can I ask you though, because, you know, this is kind of a tricky question. Do you ever see the one that, does she have wet paws and does she ever bite her own nails? The one with no growth?
No.
Okay. Because there are dogs who do that. Usually herding dogs. It's like they've been designed to maintain themselves. It's striking yeah. when you see them in the corner trimming their own nails. Most
oh,
dogs
no,
can't
God.
Do
he's,
that, though. Most dogs cannot do that.
He doesn't like dirt. He doesn't like anything. No, he doesn't touch those paws. But his nails always are perfect, same length, same thing, all the time. 3 years straight now. Never has he needed a nail clip. But the other one, all the time.
If you don't do it and the dog's nails get long, what happens is the quick gets longer and then you can't any longer cut them as short as you would have. And so
right.
what ends up happening is it becomes a chronic problem. And sometimes the nails get so long that when the dog's putting its foot down, just flat, just to walk or run, the nails are flexing and pulling away from the skin at the base. And that can cause infections. It can cause it to lose a nail. It could cause a dog to appear to have arthritis or be grumpy or not
exactly.
willing to go out when it just needed proper care. So, you know, check it out. It's not very expensive. Oftentimes the local SPCA will do it for like $5. It's really not expensive, but you need to keep it up. Get your dog used to it and keep it up.
You do. And just like what you're saying, the American Society of Prevention of Cruelty to Animals, you know, has a lot of topics on this, that long nails can be uncomfortable, painful. They dig into the soft tissue of the paw. They cause discomfort while walking. They can cause lameness and permanent, you know, limping, structural damage. And the solution is by keeping the nails trimmed to, you know, an appropriate length, doing a quick foot and toe check like your mani-pedi every week. And while you're doing that, you also want to look for cracks and tears and rips or bleeding, swelling perhaps, you know, around that nail bed. Because you know, anything can happen just like our nails when we rip and tear and bleed. One of the things about this, though, as you'll know, working with so many dogs, there's a lot of dogs who really detest having their feet handled. Again, that one dog I have, that her nails grow, you know, like... You
yeah,
know,
she'd be the one who wouldn't like it, right? She's going to be the one who won't tolerate it.
She turns into Cujo. I mean... I cannot cut her nails. She screams so loud, I take her to the vets, and even all the other vets run out of the exam room to see if someone's abusing an animal. And you can see the pet guardians in the waiting room kind of looking afraid, very afraid, you know, of like, what is going on back there?
Oh,
the
no.
other one could care less, right? You can cut his toenails all you want. But it's really about you and your pet, and if you feel confident about it, you need to, you know, educate yourself, because there's definitely a learning curve involved in trimming nails. You can watch YouTube videos, go to your local
Yeah,
groomer.
You know, when ask your vet next time you're there. And
right.
You can also ask your groomer to do it for you. If you're getting your dog professionally groomed, then ask every time. You could go to your local shelter SPCA when they have hours for this, and they'll teach you, show you, help you, etc. But it's very important that you don't cut the skin that attaches the finger or the toe of the dog's paw to the actual nail. That little piece that joins the two. Whoa, once it bleeds, even a tiny little nick, it really bleeds a lot, and it can be really, you know, quite disturbing for the person who can't get it to stop. So you got to be careful. Just take a little bit off the first times. If you're starting with a puppy, brand new, no problems, then you know what? Every day touch its feet. Every day poke around its toes. Every week trim a little off, even if you're not even taking anything off. Just get it used to the whole idea, because you can start with good habits. If you got a dog that has issues, then don't try to clip the nails. Just try and touch the foot. Give it a cookie. Then do it again later. Then try and touch a foot longer, give it a cookie. And then, you know, bring the clippers out and pet the dog with the clippers. Don't even clip the nails, give it a cookie. Get it so that it just doesn't care if the clipper's around or you're handling its feet. Now you're ready to try to quickly clip one nail, give it a cookie. And it might be a cookie that it never gets. It might be a tiny bit of liver or salmon or something that's just got the dog so distracted from the foot if you find the dog's offering his foot for the salmon, right? That's okay. How you want to go. It's pretty easy, and I think I'll do a little informational video coming up soon on that, because I'd like to show people how to trim cat's claws too. Those cats with the extra toes, they're so funny looking. I love them. I have one. But if you don't trim that nail on that extra toe, it will grow right around and back into the foot, just like an ingrown toenail, only worse. So those guys, they need to be totally mellow, relaxed around the clippers, and let you snip them. And I do that with cuddles and praise and getting them started from the beginning. So, okay, Becky, this paw talk has been great for All Paws Pet Talk. It's terrific.
Good, good, good. And the one thing, when you're talking about your dog again, remember, if you want to cut, you know, and you dare, you know, they have all those new little sanders out, you know, that rotate like a little piece of sandpaper to do the nails. And I mean, unless your dog, you know, doesn't like sound and that scares them, I wouldn't get near those things by myself. But yeah, there's a lot of options out there.
You know, okay, what you're talking about is, what you're talking about is sometimes called the Dremel. I know what it is. And it's, there's ones that have a safety so you can't accidentally cut the dog. There's other ones that don't, so be careful which you're using. But I've heard from vets that they're not really happy with the results. So, I mean, it's better than nothing. It's good in between, but it's not the best way to go. Becky, we've only got a minute. What do you want to tell people? How can they get a hold of your magazines? What do you want them to know?
You know, anybody can send me an email. It's just Becky, B-E-C-K-Y, at redstonemediagroup.com. Just like it sounds, R-E-D-S-T-O-N-E, mediagroup.com. If anyone would like some free samples of our magazines or a free subscription to try out, I'll be happy to send out any of your listeners a copy any day. Or if they have any questions or topics they want to talk about, I'm here. They can get a hold of you. You can get a hold of me.
Well, thank you, Becky. We'll talk again next week on Smart Animal Talk, All Paws Pet Talk Radio. Everybody stay tuned. We've got Dave Ratner coming next.
I'm your doggy.
I'm your doggy.
And I love you.
When it comes to health expenses, dog owners have it rough. Now, thanks to veterinarian and dermatologist Dr. Kristen Holm, your dog can be goo healthy. There's Doggy Goo to fight environmental pet allergies, Goo Gut Rescue for rescuing your dog's gut health, and Goo Silver, a broad-spectrum supplement for the special needs of your senior varsity dog. So visit HealthyGoo.com today or call 855-246-2426, and your dog can be healthy goo healthy. As a dog owner, you know that dogs can eat just about anything. But when food becomes a health troublemaker, or your animal has been on antibiotics or heavy meds, or GI issues set in, your animal's gut may be out of balance and needs Goo Gut Rescue. Goo Gut Rescue is 100% natural and veterinarian prebiotic and probiotic formulated to rescue your animal's gut from bad bug dominance. Remember, your dog's total health begins with gut health. Don't delay. Visit GooGutRescue.com.
Hey, pet lovers, listen up. No more fleas and no more ticks with the No More Tick Spray. All natural, non-toxic, and even safe enough for you to use on yourself. It smells great. You have to try it. It really works. This is what I want you to do. Go to www.nomoreticks.com. Once again, nomoreticks.com. Your pet will love you for it. Go to nomoreticks.com. Hello, you're listening to Smart Animal Talk, All Paws Pet Talk Radio, with me, Deb Wolf. And, well, right now we've got Dave Ratner back with us from last week, every week. Welcome to the show again, Dave.
Well, thank you. Thank you.
Last week we were talking about how to be a smart shopper to feed your dog properly.
Right. So I got a couple. I get emails all the time from customers because I also have. We not only have the Dave's Pet Food, but we also have seven stores. So we you know talk to customers all the time, and I got a customer who emailed me about she's been using a food. It wasn't even my brand of food, but she's been using a food for many years, and she got a batch of it, and the color looked different than it did before.
Right.
Have you ever had that? Do you use canned food, Deb?
I have not had that. I've had the smell on dry food put me off.
Yeah.
I've not had this.
It's not a bad thing. So I called the manufacturers, and they said the deal is that because they don't use any additives or they don't put any artificial colors in it or anything, the color, because there's so much just regular meat in there, the color from one batch to another can absolutely be different, which makes sense.
So it's actually good news that the color varies in that case. In the case I'm talking about, I believe the people, I was going through their back door to get their dog to collect it, and they had a bag of food. Well, I'll mention the food because it's not the fault of the food. Solid Gold. And Solid Gold back then was one of the few on the market that you could kind of rely on to have less preservatives.
Yep.
So there's a food that's not got a lot of preservatives in it sitting in a back room in the sun, in a sunny, hot sunroom. Now, it wasn't summer, so they probably didn't even think about it. But the room was over 70 degrees and the food smelled bad. So I called them and said, I'm picking up your dog. I'm picking up the food, but I think I should pick up a different bag because I think this has gone off. You know, and so sometimes how do we know by the sell-by date if we can trust it or not, the expiry date, you know, that stamp?
It's the best used by date, which is a very liberal best used by date. It's always good for months after the best used by date. But what the manufacturer can't control is the environment at your place, right? So you can buy the freshest food in the world, and if you put it in, it's summertime, and you put it in a damp, humid place, and you have dry food, chances are, if you leave it there for a week, you're going to come out, you're going to have moths in it. Right? And so people freak out and say, oh, the food's bad. Guess what? It wasn't the food's fault. It was where you put the food.
Yeah, and in this family, if they had kept it in a closed metal container in their garage in the winter, probably would have lasted far longer than in the sunroom and the southern exposure of the house, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah, you got to think about that. And I think about, what about, the raw food thing. This is a big deal. And sometimes people are so convinced that it solved every problem their dog ever had and their dog got back on, you know, out of all these chronic problems and diagnosed problems, injuries, ailments, skin problems, rashes. But then you got this raw food sitting around. And I wonder about salmonella and bacteria and dog eats it, leaves it, doesn't eat it all, comes and licks baby. Like what if a person's visiting that isn't so healthy, maybe they have an immune problem. How does that fit into the picture?
Well, so there's two things. Number one, if you're dealing with raw food, it's not if, it's when you're going to have a problem. And it might be in 10 years, might be in 2 weeks, might be in 20, but raw food is raw food, right? No ifs, ands, or buts about it. I don't care if it's raw people food or raw dog food. But the part that I think is funny, which is so true, you said, you know, people were convinced that raw food is gonna cure this and that. You ever go to the pet food forum, Deb?
I'm not sure. Where is that?
They usually hold it in Chicago or Kansas City, and it's a fascinating show. It's where all the people who make ingredients or nutritionists and the AFCO people. And it's really the insider in the industry's trade show. And one of the speakers, the first time I met, was the grandfather of raw food, the guy who invented raw food. And the title of his talk was, Can Raw Food Cure Cancer?
That's like yoga for cancer.
So he said, absolutely not.
Right.
No way. Said, if your dog is is if it's in the genes that your dog is going to get cancer, your dog is getting cancer. Food can't. Diet's not going
but
to
here's
stop.
Where people get confused. You get, if you have a dog with a tumor that they're treating and they can't remove and they don't want it to grow, they will tell you, take your dog off anything with flour, grain, wheat. Just feed him meat and veg. But that's not telling you to feed him raw. Nobody's saying raw.
Right. But here was his point.
Yeah.
The problem with pet food is there is no I think the word is empirical. There is no empirical studies pointing one thing or another. It's not like they have absolute proof that cigarette smoking causes cancer, causes lung cancer.
Right.
Or because they have never done generations of studies on dogs or cats that say even this food is better than this or this ingredient is worse than this. And this is coming from... You know, a
Mr.
very level-headed guy
who
has a dog food brand. And he was saying that most of the information is there is absolutely no scientific proof of that any of these what people espouse is true.
I get also why people think this. I mean, you use your mind and you think dog, wolf, fox, coyote. Wolves, foxes, and coyotes are not making fire and cooking food. But they're also not eating what we're eating. And the things they're eating are much fresher. It's a very different style of life, completely.
Right. Correct. So, you know, it's, for example, for corn, you know, Eukanuba and Science Diet, for years, Eukanuba was the cult food, period, end of story. Right? You remember that? Every breeder in the world used Eukanuba.
Well, but you know why? Because I remember I was in the business then because they gave you, if you collected your coupons, they gave you a pack for a big giant bag for free every 7 bags. They had the breeders because of that, the breeders discount. But anyway, we believed in Eukanuba. You're right.
Right. And so the downfall of Eukanuba and Science Diet, it was because they use corn. So when I was at the pet food forum, a nutritionist who had absolutely nothing to gain one way or another, he didn't work for any of the companies, said, at some point it will come out what a wonderful ingredient corn is due to not for protein. You need meat for protein, but for all the other benefits that finely ground corn brings. Said the problem is the marketing machines have done such a good job against corn that it'll be a real uphill battle. But he said, you wait. One of these days, someone's going to come. Yeah?
Because I've had vets on this show, this very show, Smart Animal Talk, All Paws Pet Talk Radio. Two of them, I believe, Dr. Kathy Alanovi, and I'm trying to think who the other one was. I'll think of it in a minute. Two vets who were really, really not happy with corn. And there was another one who had a whole different angle on it, talking about how the corn crop in the U.S. was compromised that year, and they were only allowed to use it in animal feed, so that the corn was going to be even worse than before. But just as a general ingredient, I've had veterinarians on this show say that it's
you know what?
Like feeding your dog filler or sawdust. Like they really not into the corn, and I felt guilty about corn ingredients all these years.
I would take the word of a trained PhD nutritionist chemist way over the word of a veterinarian who has not had that training.
I think Dr. Karen said it too. I've had like 3 or 4 veterinarians say this. And it's really hard, you know, when you go to the store and you want to do the right thing and you've got all these things in your mind. I mean, just the other day I saw a cat food commercial talking about how this cat food has brown rice only. But almost every cat expert I've ever had says cats don't need grains. So it's confusing.
The best diet, and your listeners should Google Dr. Lisa Pearson, because I'm a strong advocate of her, is your cat shouldn't be eating dry food anyway. Your cat should only be eating canned food, and it really should only be eating an all-meat canned food. Cats are pure carnivores. Cats are not omnivores like dogs or humans are. Cats are carnivores.
When you say meat, would you include seafood, shellfish? Because I see cats on the shoreline doing very well.
You know, the seafood thing is kind of interesting. Mm-hmm. You don't see lions sitting on the shore, you know, trying to scoop up fish.
No.
They attack mammals. The reason that this was marketing, the reason that you think tuna with cat food is because of the tuna fish companies.
Well, you know what? I also see it because of the feral populations. I mean, when you watch a cat colony in a shoreline location, they are scavengers and they are getting every clam and every little critter left behind. They're good at that, you know. So are the raccoons, the otters. There's a lot of animals who kind of make their food source out of the low tide.
If you want to keep your cat, you know, from getting diabetes, which is epidemic in cats, your cat should not have carbs because you know how diabetes works. Mm-hmm. Carbs turn to sugar. There goes your blood sugar, right? So an all-meat canned diet, and I bet any veterinarian out there will agree, is way better for your cat than any dry food. The problem is a lot of cats like to munch on the dry food. So at least if you can get them to eat some canned food, you're doing them a little bit of a favor.
Oh, really? See, I've not had that. I've had cats and, you know, I do foster and rescue as well. So lots of cats, but I've had them not want the dry food. I don't think I've ever had cats who prefer dry over wet. That's an interesting take.
Yeah. It must be a Canadian thing.
Oh, yeah, maybe. I don't know.
Maybe the Canadian cat. Maybe. You know, right.
I think that's a cat who finds itself rescued and at Camp Good Dog is kind of wondering what life's about anyway, and how did it end up here, and why are there so many dogs? You know, it's kind of a strange situation to be in, but this is one of my pet peeves. There was recently in the news, I just want to cover the news because we're coming to the end of the show.
Yep.
It was all about this dog attack, and it was in Richmond, which is right near the airport here in Vancouver, British Columbia, and it's brutal attack. I mean, this dog, He attacked a child, and then a young woman, the girlfriend of the owner, tried to pull him off the child. He attacked her, and then her twin sister tried to help. So he attacked two women in their 20s who were trying to defend a really small child from being attacked by this dog. And, you know, I can tell you more about it. There's a lot to be questioned on this. But one thing I noticed right from the get-go is they couldn't stop saying Rottweiler, Rottweiler, Rottweiler. And I said to the very first time it came on the news, I said to the people who are in the room with me, I bet you it turns out it's not a Rottweiler. Well, guess what? It's a Rottweiler cross. It is not a Rottweiler. And I'm so sick of people wanting it to be a Rottweiler or a pit bull every time it's a dog that does something wrong, because it minimizes the risk from other dogs and really gets people too focused on, you know, there's worse dogs and Rottweilers and pit bulls for sure out there. And a Rottie cross, was it crossed with Lab? You know, any dog can be dangerous if not trained properly and not supervised properly. And how well did this young woman know that dog? And why did she put it with a child? And where was the owner? Like, what is going on with all this? You know, very, very rarely is it true that a dog does this once and it was always good before. Usually he starts to slip up a little bit and people just ignore it. Oh, he only growls around his bed. Oh, he only growls around his food. Oh, he's only aggressive about his toys. Oh, he doesn't like, we can't take him to the dog park anymore because he doesn't like other dogs around him when he's fetching, you know, and the world gets smaller and smaller and the dog becomes more of a risk. So right then, call a trainer. You know, right then, right when it first starts, you could get your dog used to things. So, okay. So let's get back on the food topics, Dave, because I know we're running out of time. I just wanted to let people know there is a way, and I don't know what will happen with this dog, but if your dog starts to be grumpy or difficult or pose a risk in any way, don't turn away from it. Teach him that's not acceptable. He'll toe the line. You just have to show him. He's testing you. He's saying, is it okay if I growl here? Is it okay if I don't let people walk across my path? Is it okay if I hog the furniture? Tell him it's not okay. And you'll get your sweet, sweet dog back. Okay, so Dave, how can people use food better with training, do you think?
With training?
Yeah, like they used to be. I remember in the 70s, people were feeding their dogs with their hands. They weren't even putting it in the dish. There was this school that, you know, you had to have a connection with every morsel. I'm thinking sometimes, though, we do miss some of the opportunity by just throwing the food in a dish and walking away.
That's what I do with my dog.
Really? You just throw it? See, because I think there's somewhere in the middle.
Mostly canned. I give my dogs mostly canned food.
See, maybe you could, well, I would suggest to everyone out there, ask, first of all, call your dog. Because if your dog hears its name before you feed it, that's a really positive association. You don't want your dog to only hear its name when it's in trouble or the walk's over. So every day when you're feeding it, oh, absolutely, shout that name out. Mindy, Moxie, whatever. Shout it out. Let your dog hear, hey, my name's a good thing. And then when it comes, if it's difficult about coming, make sure it's already on the way. And you rattle the bag, you know, kind of tip the odd in your favor. Now you get to praise it for coming. Excellent. Okay, so now make it do something. Sit. Shake paw, lie down. It doesn't really matter what, anything. Then give it the dish, right? Right. You've already started to work on your connection with your dog, and your dog's already going to think what you say matters a little bit more, and you're a little bit more interesting, and the food tastes a little bit better because he earned it, he thinks. You can get pretty elaborate. You know, it doesn't have to stay simple. You could get to big tricks. But food matters to dogs.
I hope my wife doesn't hear you talking like this, because I don't know what will happen when I go home for dinner.
Oh, yes. Do you think so? Do you think you're trainable through food?
No. No, I flunked obedience school years ago.
If only it were that easy. There'd be no divorce, just cooking classes. Yeah, it's not that easy. But it is with your dog. See, I think sometimes we forget that they're truly food motivated in a big way, most of them. You know, it really matters to them what you've got in your pocket.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Food and treat motivated, absolutely. So you know what I struggle with when I come home? I don't know if you have a minute. Is one of my shepherds goes absolutely bonkers when I walk in the house.
Oh, okay. Jumping all over you and
jumping
yelping.
Jumping all over. Yep. Yep.
Okay, so what I would do right away is, can you get someone to help you with this right away?
Yeah.
Is there a volunteer? Okay, so what you do is you text that person or call that person so they know 5-10 minutes before you come home. If your dog's one of these dogs that runs to the door 20 minutes before, then before that, and they get a leash on him. They may even leave just a handle of a leash, you know, on him so it's easy to grab, but get a leash on him before you even come in. Now what you do is that person, or it could be you when someone else comes in, that person makes him do something else, like sit as you come in the door. He'll right away jump into the flying, whirling dervish that he was, and that person promptly just marches him away from you. He doesn't get to greet you. You do what you were going to do. Check the mail, take your shoes off, take your coat off. You pretend this isn't even happening. You don't talk about it. Don't talk to him. You don't look at him, nothing. He doesn't get anything from you until he does what she tells him, which is to sit. Or whatever it was you decided, maybe lie down if he's really, really likely to jump up again. Yep. The second he does what he's supposed to, you give him what he wants. Touch him, kiss him, you know, the whole thing.
And what do you do with the other dog?
Well, we're going to work one at a time to start, okay? Yep. So then, as you're touching him, he's going to forget, right? You're going to stop, and he's going to forget and jump up. So there's going to be some repetition here. Whoever's in charge of him is going to show him over and over again. You jump, you get nothing. You sit, you get everything. And it does take a few times. It'll be, maybe 5 or 6 times the first time you do it. And then maybe 2 or 3 more times with a smart German Shepherd before it'll get it. And then in times of like true excitement, like when you're coming home from a plane trip and he hasn't seen you for a while, he'll forget. But probably very quickly, you'll want to change the sit on the heel leash to go get your toy, bring your toy, drop your toy. So you give him something very, very active to do because he's got a lot of adrenaline going. He's very excited when you come home. So if you can get him doing a trick like bring daddy this ball, put that, you know, and then you see him, you go drop, good boy. And then you hand him the ball. Now he's doing something other than the happy, crazy dance he's decided as part of greeting you. That includes being scolded, but you know what? It's just how we greet in this house. So you're going to show him, this is how we greet in this house. You sit politely or you fetch a toy and you get daddy's total attention, touch, praise. You don't, you get nothing. So you do that for a while with that one. And then what you do is you use two-dog rivalry. So once both dogs know what's expected, you might have to do it also with your good dog, teach him what's expected, then what you do is you only pay attention to the one who's getting it right. So you ignore the rudest dog. If both sit politely, you can pet them both. If the calmer one sits and the hyper one fetches, you can pet the calmer one while you throw the fetch for the hyper one. Or, but what you don't do is touch the rude one. Right now, the rude one gets all the attention, right? And the yeah, and exactly. the well-behaved one gets ignored.
Yeah, yeah.
So spoil that polite one. Let if you're in sloppy clothes and you're strong enough and you don't care, let the rude one jump all over you and be completely ignored while you spoil the good one. He may just start mimicking and sit right there and try and get your attention by being good. Maybe, if you're lucky, but most likely you're going to need a volunteer.
Oh, yeah, no, I'm definitely going to need my wife to help me. I can't.
Oh, I wish I could be there and do this. Oh, well.
Right. Right. Well, you're not that far away. You're only about 3,500 miles, maybe.
Well, we can always Skype if you're having problems. I'm happy to do a dog training lesson with you by Skype. But otherwise, you'll just have to come back next week and tell me how it's going. Right. Start slow. Okay, just start with just him, right? Make sure the good dog gets lots of praise for being good and being polite and rewarded. But the difficult one, just stop. Don't have any more of those greetings. Make sure there's always someone to just grab him for you. And if not, if it's just you, ignore him. Just do not even look at him until he's polite. When he's polite, get down to his level and, you know, really give him what he wants. But the second he's rude, you got to tell yourself you can't see him anymore. He's invisible if he's rude. You're not going to push him or say down or off or no. That's what he wants. He wants attention. So you don't see him unless he sits. If he sits, oh, man, is he ever a good dog.
Right. Okay. That's what I'm going to do.
All right. Well, I hope you'll touch base with us and let us know how it's going next week.
Yep. I'll send you pictures of the two of them standing on me.
Well, no, I want to see pictures of the two of them sitting politely side by side.
Oh, yeah,
you know, I have a DVD, a dog training DVD, and quite a bit of it is available on YouTube. And right now I'm making some of it available by downloads on my website, dubwolf.ca. And one of the sections in there covers this, two-dog rivalry. It's these two ginormous pit bulls, and they would greet their owner with a mass scrum. You know, who could be the rudest? Who could jump the most? Who could bite the most? And it was like they were leapfrogging each other to get at this poor woman who was about 140 pounds. And each dog, one was like 110, the other was 90. Not a fair fight, especially with groceries or a baby. No, no, no. So now they sit there. They're shaking. They're so excited in a sit position, whimpering, waiting for her to decide who is the best one to get touched first. Right.
Yep,
and the other one waits to be touched second. But, you know, it's such a better scene. So reward the polite one.
Got it.
Okay, yes, thanks, ma'am. Dave. And everybody out there on Smart Animal Talk, All Paws Pet Talk Radio, if you have dog training problems, cat training problems, dog chases the cat, any problems at all, even if it's birds or fish or creepy crawlies or critters, anything at all, I'll get you an expert who knows about it and bring them on the show, because obviously you can tell by my language I'm not so into the creepy crawlies and the critters. But I will find someone who is and give you the advice, a bird expert. And we'll bring Dusty back to talk about cats, of course, and me talking about dogs, Darlene maybe in the future. So send us your problems. We'll get you your solutions on Smart Animal Talk, All Paws Pet Talk Radio, with me, Dab Wolf. Until next week, be good to your animals.
And anytime you're near.